Mike Malloy here. It's about 7 past the hour. Right-wing talk radio, which is everybody's program out there except about 5 of us now. What does right-wing talk radio put into people's heads? Fear. Fear of a terror attack. Fear of immigrants. Fear of losing jobs. Fear of death. The fear of death is there, but talk radio kind of, right-wing talk radio kind of pumps it up, you know? Fear of everything, actually, is what they do. Fear. Fear. And what's this? Glenn Beck had to take a week off? Really? Ooh, Glenn. Now think. Don't do anything rash. All right? We know you're prone to suicide, but it's just cool. Chill. Take a vacation. Or did it have something to do with losing, how many advertisers? 25? Wow. Fear. That's the reason the suicider and the pill popper, the druggie, Rush Limbaugh, and the boy who likes to go to the bunny ranch and pose with the girls, Sean Hannity, this is why they're paid millions of dollars. To make sure that tidal wave of fear keeps rolling coast to coast, border to border, coast to coast, border to border, constantly. Fear. Because if people are afraid enough, they don't question authority. Think of the 8 years, well, they don't see Barack Obama as being legitimate. But think of the years under the Bush crime family. No authority questioned at all. When Blackwater and Dick Cheney had the gun seized in New Orleans, not a peep. When Blackwater was put together as an assassination squad, not a peep. When people started noticing that there were these private contractors that were in Iraq shooting people, and then 4 of them got caught by an angry mob, burned alive, and their corpses hanged from a bridge in Fallujah, which resulted in a massive aerial and ground assault on that city, Fallujah, that resulted in 36 U.S. soldiers dying, 800 to 2,000 civilians inside Fallujah, a great number of whom were women and children, being burned alive with white phosphorus, and according to the lying Defense Department, as many as 200 insurgents. Why did that happen? Because 4 Blackwater killers who were operating outside of any law whatsoever were attacked by Sunni residents of Fallujah and murdered and burned and their corpses hanged from a bridge. Fear. Fear to keep us from thinking about what's really going on. In a new book, former Secretary of Homeland Security Tom Ridge talks about just how criminal it was under Bush. Remember the color-coded terror alerts? Ridge admits in the new book that he was pressured, he was forced to raise the terror alert color to help Bush win re-election in 2004. Think about that for a second. So for the people, these right-wing vermin who say that, well, it might have been some disagreement in 2000 about who won, but in 2004 it was legit. No, it wasn't. It wasn't legit at all. Dave Weigel, I think it's Weigel, writing for the Washington Independent, writes, quote, Rich was never invited to sit in on National Security Council meetings. He was blindsided by the FBI in morning Oval Office meetings because the agency withheld critical information from him. He found that his urgings to block Michael Brown, you remember Brownie, from being named head of the emergency agency blamed for the Hurricane Katrina disaster were ignored. And he was pushed to raise the security alert on the eve of President Bush's reelection, something he saw as politically motivated and worth resigning over. Did he resign? Now, Weigel notes in the Washington Independent that in the past, Tom Ridge denied any manipulation of security information for political reasons. In 2004, for example, after he had done specifically that, he said, we don't do politics in the Department of Homeland Security. Now, the Bush administration was forced to admit in the days after the 2004 alerts that it was, remember this, based on intelligence 3 or 4 years old. Remember that? We talked about it. We just beat that nearly to death. Officials then claimed there was a previously unmentioned separate stream of intelligence that justified the warning, but never offered any proof. So Ridge's book is coming out September 1st. It's titled The Test of Our Times, America Under Siege, and How We Can Be Safe Again. I'll tell you how to be safe again. That is, remove Hannity, Limbaugh, Savage, Beck, and the rest of these filthy bastards from the airwaves. Take their jobs away from them. They've got plenty of money. They'll be fine. Get them off the air. Didn't we talk about the treason committed by Tokyo Rose and Axis Sally? Didn't we talk about now, you right wingers, you don't have any clue about history in this country in the 40s and 50s. But there was a lot of focus paid or a lot of attention paid to the people in this country who were Nazi supporters. Now, if they were higher ups, like Henry Ford and Prescott Bush and Charles Lindbergh and people like that, I was kind of glossed over. But if there were factory workers the common man who decided that Nazism wasn't all that bad, especially given the fact that the black folks were moving up from the South to take jobs and unions were getting stronger. And those fifth columnists were watched intently. What about Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and Savage? And every one of these right-wing talk show hosts who do more damage to this country than Axis Sally or Tokyo Rose or any of the so-called suspected fifth columnists in this country during World War II ever did. Why are these people still on the air? They commit treason every day, every single day. Good example, a New Jersey blogger is facing charges in two states for allegedly making threats against lawmakers and judges. And he claims he was trained by the FBI on how to be deliberately provocative. His attorney said Tuesday that the guy, Hal Turner, yeah, him, radio talk show host, that he worked for the FBI from 2002 to 2007 as an agent provocateur. And he was taught by the agency what he could say that, you know, wouldn't be crossing the line. That's according to his defense attorney, Michael Orozco. Orozco said, quote, his job was basically to publish information which would cause other people to act in a manner which would lead to their arrest. Like Limbaugh inciting people to riot at the Democratic convention a couple of years ago. Like Hannity, who puts on his website, join the mob, like the suicider, Glenn Beck, who incites people to carry guns to presidential town hall meetings. Publish information which would cause other parties to act in a manner which would lead to their arrest. This guy is sitting in prison waiting for his trial. He's in prison on other charges. But prosecutors have acknowledged that Turner was an informant who spied on radical organizations, but defense has said Turner was not working for the FBI when he allegedly made threats against Connecticut legislators and wrote that three federal judges in Illinois deserved to die. Kind of like Glenn Beck saying he would like to strangle Michael Moore. So somebody tell me real quick here, what's the difference? More on this freak when we come back.
Radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. By the way, coming up after the next break, right at the bottom of the hour, just past the bottom of the hour, the newest episode of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe. It is kind of a retrospective during the recent little mini wave of emails from people who would like to have sex with Glenn Beck, and surprisingly, they all seem to be a male. That's all I can guess. The adoration of him goes beyond what you would normally spread where it concerns a radio talk show. So I assume they just want to get in bed with him. But amidst the garbage and the crap that these people would send to me, I think I got altogether about 70 emails from people. Because of my comments about Glenn Beck has suicide in the family, and if he does commit suicide, I would prefer he do it on television rather than radio, so it'd make a great YouTube video and probably get millions of hits. But anyway, woven in with their words and their insults that I think were great. I fully understand if somebody goes after the person you want to go to bed with verbally, of course you're going to fight back. I understand. But woven in amongst the comments were insinuations that I don't have any listeners because they'd never heard of the program. Well, the reason you people never heard of the program is because you don't listen to anything other than the right-wing garbage that makes you bat guano crazy. And I understand that, too. So we have a Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe tonight. We'll explain how long this program has been on the air. And that's coming up right after the break of the bottom of the hour. Okay, Tom Ridge lied and was forced to raise the color-coded terror alerts just prior to Bush's 2004 election, and that's because right-wingers run on fear. Even then, they had to steal millions of votes in order to pull it off. But it had to be close enough where only millions need to be stolen, not tens of millions. So Ridge now fesses up to it, and he said, well, that was reason to resign. I don't remember his resigning and saying they're forcing me to do this. Do you? But then Tom Ridge is a dishonorable son of a bitch because he is a Republican. All Republican office holders are dishonorable sons of bitches who ought to be denied ever to run again. And why not? First Amendment, my ass. These people are destroying the country. But I digress. That was one example. This guy, Hal Turner, not the one that wrote the terrible book about what was it, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Now, this is a different Hal Turner, I think. I don't know. Maybe it's the same one. I have no idea. Anyway, he was trained by the FBI to get people to do things that would lead to the arrest, the same way Beck, Hannity, and Limbaugh do now. His attorney spoke to reporters after a court hearing in Hartford, Connecticut yesterday. Turner didn't appear because he is in federal custody in Illinois. His arraignment on the Connecticut charges is set for October 19th. Now, back in June, Turner urged his readers to, quote, take up arms, end quote, against Connecticut lawmakers and suggested government officials should, quote, obey the Constitution or die, end quote, because he was angry over legislation that would have given lay members of the Roman Catholic churches more control over their parish's finances. I have no idea. Don't even ask me. He wrote in internet postings the same month that the Illinois federal appeals judges, quote, deserve to be killed, unquote, because they issued a ruling that upheld ordinances in Chicago and suburban Oak Park banning handguns. He included their photos and the room numbers of their chambers in the courthouse. So here's this guy, Hal Turner, who was trained by the FBI, according to his attorney. He worked for the FBI for 5 years during the Bush crime family reign of terror in this country, and his job was to incite other people to, according to his attorney, act in a manner which would lead to other people's arrest. Now, it doesn't say arrest on what? Jaywalking? I don't think so. Assault? Getting close. Assault with a deadly weapon? Getting closer. Murder! Bingo. We have to break here momentarily, but this is like the suicider, Glenn Beck, talking about how he presumes his Lord and Savior, Jesus H. Christ, would like to strangle Michael Moore. This is what Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest of them do. So why are they not indicted and charged with acts of terror? Why not? I'll tell you why not. Because they are cowardly sons of bitches who hide behind the First Amendment that they would destroy when they finally assist in bringing real fascism to the United States. That's why. All Republicans, I've said it before, all Republicans are basically cowards. Absolute cowards. Stick around. We'll have a little Mike Malloy Radio Comes You break for you when you come back. It's either that or just get all worked up here at the beginning of the program, and I don't want to! Everybody came running. Everybody said, Lord, 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 Lord. Everybody was on in. They're gonna divvy up the reward. One. There came a siren and a flash of light. But the mean individual there till the black night. Hey. They wonder where to begin. Because he left the neighborhood like a rattlesnake shedding his skin. Well, they search the rooms, they check out the groups, and then. This portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it is our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. It's about 25 before the hour. All right, This was the Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe episode that was scheduled to come out like a month ago. But first I got a nice bronchitis to deal with, and then the gig in Seattle, and yada, yada, yada. So we finally got it together. This episode, as all episodes, are written and produced by Bob Alexander and performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players.
Of Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Good evening, truth seekers from coast to coast, border to border, and around the globe. Join us tonight as we listen to highlights selected from the voluminous case files of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe. Dateline 1934, Tuesday night, November 20th. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe debuts on the Mutual Broadcasting System. While listening audiences are captivated by the latest exploits of John Dillinger, Ma Barker, and Bonnie and Clyde, the Malloy program exposes a different class of gangsters.
Operator, Give me Lakeview 27904. Mm-hmm. Hello, Kathy? Yeah, I've just left General Butler. He's been asked to lead the fascist coup against President Roosevelt.
Who's behind it?
Wall Street bankers, industrialists, and some of the most famous families in America. Get me everything you can dig up on, one Prescott Bush. Yeah, he's in on it, too. We can break the story before the Post gets it. Kathy? Kathy, are you there? The line's dead.
Now, ain't that too bad?
You thugs are never going to get away with this.
Yeah, and you'll set your trap if you know what's good for you. Boys, take Malloy here for a ride.
The Motion Picture Production Code, the industry's censorship guidelines, eventually spread to radio. In an attempt to soften Mike's hard-boiled tough guy reporter image, the writers saddled him with a young sidekick, Skippy McDaniels, and his lovable dog, Puddles.
Oh, no, Skippy, I'm afraid we can't go fishing today. I've got a big story to write.
What's the matter, Pop? Don't you love me anymore?
Okay, that's it. I've had it. Get this kid and his dog and cover the news instead of this. As soon as you people get your head out of here, give me a call. Of all the I've had to put up with.
After the attack at Pearl Harbor, America jumped into World War II with both feet. Patriotism was whipped up to a fever pitch as radio programs around the dial urged Americans to buy war bonds to help defeat the Axis menace. Ever alerted to the fascist threat to our freedoms at home, Malloy exposed fifth columnists in this country who were cooperating with the enemy abroad.
Okay, Malloy, now we're breaking and entering. Got any other crimes in mind we can commit tonight?
Relax, Dollface, and shine that flashlight over here.
When will the night watchman be back?
A few minutes after we're out of here. Hey, look at these dates. Now we've got the goods on Prescott Bush. Even after America entered the war, Bush worked for and profited from the German businesses that financed Hitler, in clear violation of the Trading with the Enemy Act.
What'll happen to him?
Well, the government will seize the assets of Bush's bank. And that'll be the end of any aspirations he might have about running for office. Who's going to vote for a Nazi collaborator?
The 50s. Post-war America divides its time between making babies, embracing a culture of consumerism, and looking for commies under every coonskin cap. And then the 60s. The British invaded our airwaves as the United States invaded Vietnam. When Timothy Leary said, "Turn on, tune in, drop out," Mike attempted to do two of those while covering the Democratic convention in Chicago. Here he is in a rare interview with the Democratic nominee.
We're talking tonight with presidential hopeful Hubert Humphrey. As the walls throb in sync with my breathing, and the microphone is melting into a silver pool out of time. Does it concern you at all, Mr. Vice President? You sound almost exactly like Elmer Fudd.
The 70s saw the Watergate scandal unfold along with arguably the most vile form of music devised by modern man.
The story's gone stale.
You tell me what you know and I'll confirm. I'll keep you in the right direction if I can, but that's all.
I've got some sources, but they're drying up.
Forget the myths the media has created about the White House. The truth is, these are not very bright guys, and things got out of hand.
What do you have on Howard Hunt? There was talk his lawyer had $25,000 in cash in a paper bag.
Follow the money. Just follow the money.
Follow the money. Excellent advice for tracking Republican corruption into the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Here's a clip from an episode from the Reagan era.
What do you have lined up for tonight?
Aldi North, smuggling cocaine from Central and South America into this country to get more cash for the Contras. What do you have?
Well, Reagan's Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration have classified pickle relish and ketchup as vegetables so they can cut $1 billion from subsidized meals for low-income students.
Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people?
That's pretty good. Try to work it in the show. Maybe it'll catch on.
And the new century begins with the Supreme Court handing the presidency to failed businessman and Texas Governor George W. Bush. For 8 years, the pundits and talking heads from mainstream media are paid to look the other way, while a select few correspondents continue to search out the real news of the day.
As long as there's a story, I'll follow it. That's my job. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
And as long as right-wing radio dominates our nation's airwaves, as long as the corporate media dictates what we're supposed to see and hear, as long as there are truth seekers listening across the nation, Mike Malloy is on the job.
You betcha.
I like that one. I really do. That was written and produced by Bob Alexander and performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. The latest episode of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe. So to all you twits out there who wrote to me about your boy, Glenn Beck, the suicider, there's your proof. This program has been on the air for decades. And if you've never heard of it before, that's your problem. All right, I want to go home, which means just leave the studio and go upstairs. That was, what are you going to do for an encore after that, right? Okay, well, the big story, Cheney's assassination squad. Now we know who it was. New York Times is reporting that in 2004, the CIA hired Blackwater as part of a secret program to locate and assassinate those suspected of being operatives of Al-Qaeda. And according to the New York Times, it's unclear whether the CIA had planned to use the contractors to capture and kill Al-Qaeda operatives or just help with the training and surveillance. Big article out this evening. Jeremy Scahill at thenation.com. To read the whole thing, I guess you have to be a subscriber. But why aren't you? If you're not a subscriber to The Nation, you should be. Anyway, Scahill, who has been, who's written a book about these bastards, says a private security company doesn't have a license to operate in Iraq, but the State Department continues to employ Eric Prince's armed mercenaries. They have a long, dark history with the CIA. And the questions now are the Cheney's private hitmen. I'll go ahead and answer it because I'm an irresponsible radio talk show host. Well, of course they were. Who do you think it was? Elmer Fudd? Despite the State Department's announcement canceling Blackwater's contracts in Iraq, the Obama administration will pay the company more than $174 million for services in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're still there. They're still killing people. They're still doing what one squad of the United States Marine Corps could do, and do with a degree of efficiency that would make these slugs look like the punk-ass amateurs that they are. What is this? What is this? In April 2002, the CIA paid Blackwater more than $5 million to deploy a small team of men inside Afghanistan. A few months later, the company's owner and former Navy SEAL Eric Prince flew to Afghanistan as part of the original 20-man Blackwater contingent. They stayed in a mud fortress known as the Alamo. Scahill says that the New York Times is reporting that, quote, the CIA did not have a formal contract with Blackwater for this program, but instead had individual agreements with top company officials, including Eric Prince, a politically connected former member of the Navy SEALs and heir to a family fortune. A retired intelligence officer intimately familiar with the assassination program told the Washington Post, quote, outsourcing gave the CIA more protection in case something went wrong, end quote. The Post reported that Blackwater, quote, was given operational responsibility for targeting terrorist commanders and was awarded millions of dollars for training and weaponry. Operational responsibility. That means they decide what the tactics are going to be, what the objective is, and whether or not and when the objective has been met. A private security firm.
Ah,
deadly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, do that. 10 before the hour, Red says the Nation article by Jeremy Scahill is free. You don't have to be a subscriber. So go to thenation.com if you want to read this. It is another astonishing part of the ongoing expose. Jeremy Scahill is a one-man demolition unit where it concerns these freaks at Blackwater, or Z as they're known now. Anyway, back to Scahill. His article is at The Nation. The Washington Post reported that Blackwater was given operational responsibility for targeting commanders. Alleged terrorist commanders was awarded millions of dollars for training and weaponry. Jack Rice, a former CIA field operator who worked for the CIA Directorate of Operations, which runs covert paramilitary activities for the CIA, said, quote, "What the agency, the CIA, was doing with Blackwater scares the hell out of me. When the agency actually cedes all oversight and power to a private organization, an organization like Blackwater, most importantly, they lose control and don't understand what's going on." He goes on, quote, "What makes it even worse is that you can then turn around and have deniability. They can say, CIA can say, it wasn't us. We weren't the ones out there making the decisions." And that gives the CIA the best of both worlds. It's analogous to what we hear about torture. It was being done in the name of Americans. When we simply handed somebody over to the Syrians or the Egyptians or others, and then we turn around and say, "What, me? I'm not torturing people. What? What? What are you talking about? We stopped that way back when. What?" Jesus, God. The depth of the criminality of the Bush crime family is almost unplumbable. I don't know how, unless there is a full-scale investigation, how we're ever going to get to the bottom of what these rapacious, criminal, murdering sons of bitches did to our country, our Constitution, our people, our soldiers, innocent civilians by the hundreds of thousands. According to Jeremy Scahill, reached by telephone, Illinois Democrat Jan Schakowsky, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, said that because of her oath of secrecy on sensitive intelligence issues, she could neither confirm nor deny that Congress was aware of Blackwater's involvement in this program. Schakowsky also declined to comment on whether Blackwater came up at a June briefing by CIA Director Leon Panetta, which she attended. That briefing sparked calls for an investigation into whether Cheney ordered the CIA to conceal an assassination program from Congress. Schakowsky told The Nation the following, quote, "What we know now, if this is true, is that Blackwater was part of the highest level, the innermost circle, strategizing and exercising strategy within the Bush administration. Eric Prince operated at the highest and most secret level of the government." Clearly, Schakowsky goes on, "Clearly, Prince was more trusted than the U.S. Congress because Vice President Cheney made the decision not to brief Congress. This shows that there was absolutely no space whatsoever between the Bush administration and Blackwater," end quote. I would disagree with that, Congresswoman Schakowsky. When you say Prince was more trusted than the U.S. Congress, no, no, no. He was just another co-conspirator with the sick son of a bitch, Dick Cheney. It wasn't a matter of trust at all. It was a matter of a couple of murderers working together, Cheney and Prince. And when the time came, if the time would have come, where Prince had to be offed, Cheney would have ordered it in half a heartbeat. That's what somebody like Dick Cheney does. That's what Hitler did where it concerned Erich Röhm. Prince is just another arrow in the Bush crime family's quiver. And as The Nation has reported, Blackwater continues to operate on the U.S. government payroll in both Iraq and Afghanistan, where it works for the State Department and the Defense Department. The CIA, of course, will not confirm whether Blackwater continues to work for the agency or, for that matter, if it ever has. Go to thenation.com and get Jeremy Scahill's piece, Blackwater, CIA Assassins. Of course. Of course. But this is where
cowardly little pissants like Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity. This is where they're very valuable to this incipient arriving American fascism, because these little twits can shift the cameras over to a bunch of people rattling tea bags, then shift the cameras over to a bunch of people holding up signs with Obama with a upper lip mustache like Hitler. This is what these people are good for. This is what Hannity and Beck and Limbaugh, this is why they are paid millions of dollars. They are Tokyo Rose. They are Axis Sally. They are traitors to the United States. They are traitors to the United States. They seek the overthrow of representative government, and they want to do this for sport. That's all. For sport. To do it for the same reason that a dog sits down and licks its own crotch. Because it can. And that's what Hannity and Limbaugh and Beck and their spawn do. They sit there, and just like the this guy Hal Turner, they put information out, false information, lies, incitements to cause people to go do things that will get them arrested, so that the pig man can sit back on his haunches and laugh and pop another OxyContin, so that Beck can parade around his Fox News studio and weep and whine. Just keep the sharps away from that freak. And so Hannity can make another trip out to the Bunny Ranch. Jesus God! It's 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. And I want to remind you, this portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it is our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. In addition to the poison that continues to be pumped into the national discourse by these right-wing pigs, there is this story that was out today. The Lockerbie bomber, the only one that was convicted, President Obama, he was released. President Obama says the release is a mistake. Ali Mohamed al-Megrahi, I'll call him al-Megrahi, Obama's called on Libya to assure that al-Megrahi is not given a welcome back to his home country after being released from a Scottish prison, but as you saw in the news, and of course he was, thousands were on hand to greet him when his plane from Scotland touched down at a military airport in Tripoli. According to the Telegraph of the UK, there was a festive atmosphere with some of the people waiting to greet him wearing T-shirts with Megrahi's picture. Others waved flags while Libyan songs blared.
El-Megrahi, like I said, the only man convicted of this horrific bombing, continued to protest his innocence and expressed his, quote, sympathy with the victims of the tragedy. In a statement released after he left Britain on a chartered flight, Megrahi said that the rest of his days would be, quote, lived under the shadow of the wrongness of my conviction, end quote. He has apparently terminal prostate cancer. Doctors say he has only a few weeks to live. In a statement, he said, quote, I cannot find words in my language or yours to give proper expression to the desolation I have felt. This horrible ordeal is not ended by my return to Libya. It may never end for me until I die. Perhaps the only liberation for me will be death. He said that's the end of the quote. He said he described his relief at securing his freedom, but he expressed regret that he'd been forced to drop his appeal against his conviction. The statement went on, quote, I had most to gain and nothing to lose about the whole truth coming out until my diagnosis of cancer. To those victims' relatives who can bear to hear me say this, they continue to have my sincere sympathy for the unimaginable loss they have suffered, end quote. Now, I understand the value of PR, and I also understand that someone who's facing terminal cancer, who has persisted in declaring his innocence for all these years, I don't know, 1988, 270 people blown to pieces when the Pan Am plane was exploded over Lockerbie, Scotland. People here in America, of course, who had relatives on that flight are outraged, most of them. I think one of the people who lost a relative who died in the explosions when the plane hit the ground, I saw him interviewed, briefly, not interviewed, but a quick statement. He said that he thinks that the release of this guy under humanitarian reasons, because he's dying, is Scotland declaring itself to be a humane country. And, you know, before the program tonight, Kathy and I talked about this. If he was in fact guilty, releasing him from prison because he is has terminal prostate cancer is, I don't know, a lot of people die in prison. And someone who calculatedly and coldly destroyed the lives of 270 people, plus destroyed the lives of hundreds upon perhaps thousands of people who were related to those 270 or were family members of those 270 victims, to show compassion for someone like that is way beyond anything I could do. And of course, I fully admit that, and I'm not ashamed of it. I'm not that enlightened of a being. I'm just not. I would say keep him in prison until he dies. And having said that, what I just said, are you aware, truth seeker, that there were a couple of other theories around that jet exploding in midair and taking the lives of 270 people? Are you aware? Now, 1988, you know, that's 20-some years ago. But let's go over two of the alternative theories here. And you don't have to put on your tinfoil hat. This is not conspiracy stuff. This is just one way or two different ways here of looking at this horrible tragedy. The CIA is alleged to have set up a protected drug route from Europe to the United States. It was called Operation Korea, C-O-R-E-A, Operation Korea, which allowed Syrian drug dealers to ship heroin to the U.S. using Pan Am flights in exchange for intelligence on Palestinian groups based in Syria. The CIA allegedly protected the suitcases containing the drugs to guard them from searches when they were put on the Pan Am planes. On the day of the bombing, the theory goes, terrorists exchanged suitcases, one with drugs for one with bombs, or a bomb. Now, a more extreme version of this theory is that the CIA knew in advance this exchange would take place, but let it happen anyway. Sound familiar? Because the protected drug route was a rogue operation within the CIA. And the American intelligence officers on Pan Am 103, Matthew Gannon and Major Charles McKee, who died, had found out about this operation and were on their way to Washington to blow the whistle. The former version of the protected suitcase theory was suggested in October 1989 by Juval Aviv, the owner of Interfor Incorporated, a private investigation company based in New York. Aviv is an ex-Mossad officer. There is no such thing as ex-Mossad. Aviv was a Mossad officer, Israeli intelligence, and was employed by Pan American as their lead investigator for the bombing. And he is the one who advanced the theory, not somebody sitting in a dark room with a computer and, antennas coming out of his head and a tinfoil hat snugly taped to his forehead. No. An Israeli intelligence officer, a Mossad officer employed by Pan Am as their lead investigation after the bombing, came to the conclusion that the CIA was up to its neck in this. Just like the CIA was up to its neck in the transshipment of drugs from Colombia during the Oliver North heyday and during the Reagan years in order to fund that, just as the CIA was involved in setting up trading TOW missiles for hostages, just as the CIA was involved in the murder in Gojinjiam, just as the CIA, you see, it goes on and on and on. So which is the lie and which is the truth? If the CIA overthrows governments and assassinates leaders, and innocent people die in the process, collateral damage, dude. Sorry. Bigger things are at stake than the lives of 270 people to these thugs. Now, Aviv, the Mossad officer's claims, provide a Pan American with a credible defense against claims for compensation by relatives of victims. Since if the U.S. government had helped the bomb bypass Pan Am security, the airline could hardly have been held liable. Here's the interesting part. Aviv was never interviewed by either the Scottish police, who had jurisdiction, or the FBI. Isn't that interesting? I think it is. I also think it's mind-boggling. So there's theory one. Secret Dugs, the suitcase, and the CIA. When we come back after the break, I'll give you, we have a shadow government. I'll give you theory two.
It's business is no business of the likes of you and me. Nobody knows who's in it. They've been carefully selected. Bipartisan appointees who themselves were not elected. They hold top-level meetings at undisclosed locations to suspend the Constitution and sustain the corporation. Their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared. And by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts?
Show. Talk radio matters here.
Past the hour. Okay, so if Al Megrahi, who was released from a Scottish prison today after serving, 8 years? 6 years? 8 years? And has been released on humanitarian grounds because he is being eaten up with cancer and wants to go home to die. If he did not do it, who did? McGrath has protested his innocence all these years and continues to do so even as he's released. There was no, ha-ha, gotcha. And I don't know what his religious beliefs are, if he even has any, but he is now facing imminently his own death, which has a way of focusing the mind. And I just, all the bells went off in my head today, and there are many of those, about Megrahi. I can remember being very, very suspicious during the trial, thinking, but then, I'm 4,000 miles away, 5,000, what do I know? You know, away from the crime scene. So the first theory is, once again, the CIA, and to a lesser degree or a greater degree, Mossad, had set up this drug smuggling ring, or not a drug smuggling ring, allowed Syrian drug dealers to use Pan Am flights to bring drugs into the country. In return, the Syrians would keep watch on Palestinians operating in their country. That has such a familiar ring, doesn't it? And the person who came up with this theory is a guy named Yuval Aviv, the owner of Interfor Incorporated, a private investigation company based in New York. Aviv is a Mossad officer who is employed by Pan Am as their lead investigator for the bombing. And he is the one who came up with the theory. Now, the other theory, there are several. I'm only going to bore you with two. The South Africa luggage swap. Now, remember when this occurred, right? Remember the date. This was in, this is during the Reagan years. And it was during a time when the Reagan administration refused to, there's no point in my getting into it. Let's just go to the luggage, South Africa luggage swap. According to this theory, apartheid South Africa was responsible for the sabotage of Flight 103. On December 22nd, 1988, the day after the Lockerbie bombing, the Namibia Independence Agreement was signed at UN headquarters in New York. A 23-strong South African delegation headed by Foreign Minister Pik Botha canceled a booking on the flight at short notice. There was also a last-minute change of travel plans by the UN Commissioner for Namibia, Brent Carlson. Carlson is alleged by some to have been the target of South African military intelligence operatives, having been the architect of Namibian independence. Instead of flying direct from Brussels to New York, Carlson was persuaded to stop over in London and get on Pan Am 103 transatlantic flight. And 23 members of the South African delegation, headed by Pik Botha, canceled a booking on the flight. On the day of the bombing, Carlson arrived at Heathrow from Brussels at 11:06 with a booking to travel on to New York on Flight 103. Carlson was met at the airport by Timothy, who worked for the De Beers diamond thingy and was taken by car to central London. After the meeting with De Beers, Carlson was brought back to Heathrow. His already checked-in suitcase would have remained at Heathrow Airport for about 7 hours, thus providing South African airside authorized personnel with ample opportunity to substitute it for the bomb suitcase. That South Africa Airlines were involved unlawfully switching baggage that day was confirmed by a Pan Am security officer, Michael Jones, at the Lockerbie fatal accident inquiry in October 1990. Within a week of the death of Bernd Carlson on flight PA-103, his office safe at the United Nations had been broken into, and his apartment, which had been sealed by UN security staff, was also burgled. Neither his girlfriend nor his sister could identify a single shred of anything in his luggage at the property store in Lockerbie. So, and there's a couple more. There's a couple more of these theories. The Iranian theory that it was retribution for The Iranian Airbus that was blown out of the sky, the Persian Gulf, 300 people died on July 3rd, 1988. So, the Libya and Abu Nidal, that theory. But there you go. Now, if you had to choose between this guy who is eaten up with and dying of prostate cancer, operating apparently on his own, with no actual motive except, I guess, hatred of the United States, if you have that on the one side, where and he's denied it from the very beginning, I'm not defending him. I'm just saying, here's your toss-up question. And denies it now as he's staring into his own ending.
And on the other hand, you have the CIA, which has a 60-year-long reputation of assassination, murder, collateral damage. They don't give a goddamn who dies when they decide to go after somebody or two somebodies, like the two guys who happen to be on this flight. With their reputation, who would you pick?
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. So, what do you think about Abdel Basset Ali Mohamed Al-Megrahi? Sorry for the garbled pronunciation there. Released today on, according to the Scottish authorities, humanitarian grounds because he's dying of prostate cancer, still protesting his innocence. And the alternative theory is one put forward by someone hired by Pan Am to investigate, who is a Mossad agent who runs a private security and investigation firm. Oh, my God. Now, there's one more piece. Bill from Ottawa sent me. This is from the Scotsman, the newspaper that we quote a lot on this program. This is from August 29th, 2005, about 4 years ago. And the headline is, former police chief says Lockerbie evidence faked. Here's what it says. Crucial new claims that could free the Libyan convicted of the Lockerbie bombing have emerged via a retired Scottish police officer of high rank who has told lawyers that vital evidence was fabricated. The revelation could represent the most dramatic breakthrough for the legal team acting for Mohamed Al-Megrahi since his conviction for mass murder in 2001. The retired officer was a member of the Association of Chief Police Officers of Scotland and therefore achieved the rank of Assistant Chief Constable at the very least. He has supported the evidence provided to Megrahi's lawyers by a former CIA agent that senior figures in United States intelligence wrote the script to incriminate Libya for the bombing. The Scottish officer's validation of the claim gives it a credibility it would not otherwise have had, given the senior rank that he held. Sources close to Megrahi's legal team have said the retired officer approached him after Megrahi's appeal before a bench of five Scottish judges dismissed the appeal in 2002. One source said, quote, he said he believed he had crucial information. A meeting was set up and he gave a statement that supported the longstanding rumors that the key piece of evidence, a fragment of circuit board from a timing device that implicated Libya, had been planted by U.S. agents, end quote. Asked why I had not come forward before, the police officer admitted he had been wary of breaking ranks, afraid of being vilified. He also said that at the time he became aware of the matter, no one really believed there would ever be a trial. Dr. Jim Swire, who has publicly expressed his belief in Megrahi's innocence, said it was right. It was right that all relevant information should be put to the Scottish Criminal Cases Review Commission. Dr. Swire, whose daughter Flora was killed in the bombing, said, quote, it is in all our interests that areas of doubt are thoroughly examined, end quote. So that's from the Scotsman, Scottish newspaper from 4 years ago. You remember the crucial piece of evidence, of course, I had forgotten until this rereading this article, was a piece of a circuit board that was traced back to Libya. And this police chief now says that he was told by a CIA officer that that had been planted. So, like I said, who are you going to believe, you know? And then the other thing, in the article in the Scotsman that Bill sent me from the article from 4 years ago, there is a picture, a full-color picture that appeared with the article that showed the reconstruction of that aircraft as best as could be reconstructed. But there it is in a hangar
great big chunks of this aircraft that are put together by investigators so they can get an idea of you know, the force of the blast, what occurred, how it was done, yada, yada, yada. And immediately you wonder, why was that not done for Flight 93 that, you know, crashed in Pennsylvania on September 11, 2001? Why not? Why was there no wreckage anywhere of Flight 93? All in one place. Why was the little pieces and shards scattered over? Oh, never mind. You know, I realize a lot of people who listen to this program are convinced that what happened on September 11th...
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Ten before the hour, last night when I was talking about the newest scam that's heading our way, teabaggers and healthcare geeks and freaks, and the new one, of course, is cap and trade, and how the oil companies are going to be organizing. The American Petroleum Institute and the rest of these organizations are going to be sending out some of their employees and fake groups, and they're probably in negotiations right now with Hannity and Beck and Limbaugh and the rest of the pigs, deciding on a price to incite people to go get all foamed up about this one. The issue is about trying to keep the air breathable and the temperature of the globe livable for maybe another 40 or 50 years, and then, you know, to hell with it. Then we can all die, those of us who are still alive. That would be your children and mine, probably. But anyway, I was talking about last night, Danny in Los Angeles writes, Mike, when you were talking about the oil company's actions, you said Exxon did this and Conoco did that. We all do this, and we should stop. Referring to companies as actors reinforces the public's belief that they are like people, that the companies are like people. Don't we want to break that habit? The fact is, the actors are the executives of these corporations, not the corporations themselves. Corporations are just legal shells. We should always say, quote, the executives of Exxon did this, and the executives at Conoco did that. End quote. It only takes a fraction of a second longer to say it this way, and in my opinion, it's a powerful method of cutting through the smog corporate executives and their government enablers have laid over the fiction of corporate personhood. Good point. Good point. Danny, I'll try to remember to do that. Excellent. Excellent point. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, a corporation doesn't do anything. That's like saying the White House today said, you know, and I rail against that. You know, this is, you know, that's just laziness and stupidity. And I'm doing the same thing where it concerns corporations. So thank you, Danny. From Roz writes, Mike, regarding Glenn Beck and his kind, do you know that they and a small part of the population have almost succeeded in crippling the government? To the point that government can't get their message out regarding health care. Unfortunately, President Obama seems to be the kind of man who wants to please all the people. What happens if all this interference impedes him doing the best job of running the country? Also, if there was a real threat from without the country, would these same idiots once more get in his way? Lots of questions, I know, but consider this. Since Beck and Limbaugh are saying crazy things, then why can't they be accused of being foreign agents in the pay of those who want to see the United States destroyed? Just torn down the middle. It's time people started pointing the finger at them. A la McCarthy. What sport that would be. Roz. Yeah, well, some of us have tried that. Tried it and tried it and tried it. But as long as corporate America in any form supports these bastards, I realize a lot of 20 or 25 corporations have pulled their advertising from the Beck program. Which is a good start, but in so many instances, the advertising was just shifted to a different time slot on Fox News. If they finally deep six this jerk, or if he offs himself, there will be somebody else to take his place. Fox News is the one that should be shut down. Seriously, they really should.
Oh, but Mike, the First Amendment.
Yeah, that's right, First Amendment. Okay. What else we got here? Oh, yeah, from the LA Times, Republican senators are warning Attorney General Eric Holder against a CIA abuse inquiry. You know, don't go there, Eric. Don't go there about torture and murder. The Republicans wrote a letter. It said such an investigation would distract the agency, the CIA, and, quote, could leave us more vulnerable to attack, end quote. A Republican, see, Republicans are a part of, oh, man, I just all of a sudden, I just want to start screaming. Republicans are part of the destruction of this country. So they make a statement like that. No. If you investigate, that could distract them. You rotten bastards. Really? So when the Republicans say something could leave us more vulnerable to attack, what they really mean is that they're more vulnerable to prosecution. Bob sent this to me. Bob says, maybe they're worried something like this could come out. Oops, too late. Just one more atrocity for the Obama administration to ignore. And then, of course, the report that the CIA hired Blackwater contractors to be a secret hit squad. And I mean, you know, I wonder. I just wonder. Stephen Pizzo wrote this morning, quote, yesterday I came this close to scraping the Obama sticker off my rear window. The thing that stopped me was the realization that we are in the midst of a hero shortage. I had nothing with which to replace it. No sign of hope anywhere, anyone. Then I went to RollingStone.com this morning and listened to Matt Taibbi's piece about what's really been going on and still is going on behind the scenes at the White House. No wonder they got caught flat-footed by our angry reaction earlier this year when they started to talk about the public option in the past tense. They've been too busy giving giving hand jobs to the insurance and pharmaceutical industries. Do I exaggerate? Only in metaphoric terms. Look, I got to go out and scrape that sticker off my window because after watching the videos that make up the bulk of Taibbi's report, I figured nothing really is better than what's there now. Color me betrayed. Have a disappointing day. Oh, and apparently you better get used to it. Steve Pizzo. So what do you want to do? I'll tell you what, let's do. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to open up the lines, and you can give us a call, okay? 877. What's the damn number? 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. You know what? At the bottom of this hour, we're going to play the gumshoe thing again for the people who didn't hear it the first time. I love that. I love the one that Bob Alexander wrote and produced. That's performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. We'll play it for you in about half an hour. Stick around. Don't go away. No telling what might happen. Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it is our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. It's about 7 past the hour. Yeah, I touched on this a second ago because Bob has sent me the headline, but it's from the LA Times. Excuse me. leading Republican lawmakers are cautioning, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder yesterday against opening an investigation into alleged CIA interrogation abuses like, you know, torture and murder, saying that such an inquiry could have serious national security repercussions. They always say that, don't they? Huh? You filthy pigs. The Republicans wrote in a letter to Holder, signed by nine of these bastards, quote, "It is well past time for the Obama administration to lift the cloud that has been placed over those in the intelligence community and let them return to the job of saving American lives." Yeah, that's what it says. Among those to sign the letter were John Kyle, Republican Arizona, Christopher Bond of Missouri, Jeff Sessions of Alabama, top Republican on the Judiciary Committee, who always talks like this because he's got a mouth full of feet. The letter underscored the political dynamics surrounding Holder's deliberations over launching a criminal inquiry into whether CIA interrogators exceeded guidelines from the Justice Department and how far they could go to get prisoners to talk, yada, 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 yada. In their letter, the Republicans emphasized that the Justice Department had had the CIA report for more than 5 years and that career prosecutors who previously reviewed the cases concluded there was not enough evidence to warrant criminal prosecutions. The letter said, "It is difficult to understand what rationale could drive the Justice Department to now reverse course, reopen a 5-year matter, and tarnish the careers, reputations, and lives of intelligence community professionals." Bob wrote one more thing. He says, "We're all effing doomed. Assault rifles at Obama healthcare rally. I know it's been covered. I know it's been mentioned that wearing an anti-Bush t-shirt at a Bush rally got people arrested a couple of years ago. I know the presence of guns near Obama is an invitation of a silver platter to blow his head off. I know, but stating the obvious doesn't seem to get the Secret Service into doing, you know, their protect the president from being assassinated job." Tick, tick, tick. Anyone who is interested, anyone who is surprised when the president gets shot is a person who, after knocking a glass of water over to a restaurant, complains to the waiter, "How'd this water get all over my table?" I knew analytical thinking had pretty much died off, but I didn't know that the whole cause and effect thing had been tossed out, too. Weird. Should we play Waltzing Matilda? No? All right. Let's do this. Jean is in Detroit, listening online. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Mike. What you just said sets my hair on fire. I just cannot believe that. I originally was calling to say that several years back, in looking on the Gander Crash Memorial online.
Uh-huh.
Because one of my cousins, or my cousin's oldest son, was killed in the Gander Crash,
mm-hmm.
the 258.
Mm-hmm.
That's never been investigated either. And
I wonder who was on that plane that the CIA may have wanted removed or eliminated or destroyed.
Well, there was 200 and some, I believe, of our military from Fort Campbell.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of them were like the pilot and the stewardesses and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from what I've been able to discern, do you remember the Achilles Laurel?
Oh, yeah, the Achilles Laurel, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The incident?
Mm-hmm.
My understanding, the guys that we sent over there to go after those terrorists were on board that also.
Well, it's hard to keep track of them, Gene, even with a flow chart that stretches back over 60 years. You know, folks like you and me would get lost after about 2 minutes of trying to figure out all the murder and mayhem and torture and disappearances and explosions and overthrows and destabilizations. There's no way to keep track of it. No way. It's just, that's where we live. It's not really the American mythology of the land of the free and the home of the brave. And yeah, we're all happy here. I pledge allegiance to the flag and mom and apple pie and all this other stuff. We only fight for the good guys. You know, none of that is true.
Yeah.
None of it ever has been, but it's been one hell of a mythology. And it's worked. It's worked to keep most of us in line for the past, oh, I don't know, 100 years. So I just wonder how much longer it's going to hold. Everything is collapsing. In terms of the mythology, everything is collapsing. And anyone who still believes this, who still believes the catechism of the United States of, by God, America, you know, the shining city on the hill and, you know, yada, 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 yada. It's amazing to me. And I'm not saying, and thanks, Gene. Thanks for your call. I'm not saying that we should all, you know, go commit a group suicide. What I'm saying is, why don't we pull our heads out of our nether parts and face what the country really is and change it? What did I just say? Never mind. Never mind. Tom DeLay is going to be on Dancing with the Stars this fall. So what? Pull our heads out of our rear ends and change it? Huh? What, Kathy? Tom DeLay, not Tom Daschle. Tom DeLay is going to be on Dancing with the Stars. So, you know, the idea that, that we can destroy the mythology and replace it with truth is so far outside the realm of, possibility, not to even mention probability, is to render it just, you know, garbage. Garbage. We are in a, I don't know where we are. Yeah, we're watching fascism come to the United States. Yes, everyone in the political science world will tell you that. The people who have the courage to speak out will tell you that. We are in that area of fascism right before the camps are built or activated. They're all built. And I love it. The right wingers say, well, those are the camps where they're going to put Second Amendment people. You dumbasses. How could you be so stupid? But, you know, what to do? What to do? What did I say a minute ago? It's time for us to burn the mythology to the ground and really build a society based on truth and justice, and we're the good guys, and we stand for freedom and liberty and free thought. And no, can't do that. In Texas, they're going to start teaching kids about talking snakes and great big arcs that floated on the ocean with two of everything, including dinosaurs and brontosauruses and germs and mosquito bugs and... And Sarah Palin has herself periodically exorcised just in case there might be any stray demons floating around who want to enter one of her body orifices and take control. Think about that. No, don't think about that. So there we are. You know, Sarah Palin, who, along with John McCain, managed to garner how many votes? How many votes last time? 52 million votes? Someone who stands in a church and has a minister wave spook magic over her to chase the spooks and haints and demons away, right? Huh? So what to do? You know, how do we tear down the mythology? How do we replace it with honest? An honest look at life, and our place in the scheme. And you know, and I know, that that's an impossibility at this point. We know that. We know that. So just make sure your popcorn bowl is, filled up and we'll watch the movie. We'll be right back.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, Steve the banker writes regarding those hearings that the Republicans don't want held. Justice Department investigations into torture killers? No, 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 no. Mike, any Republican senator who signed a letter warning the Justice Department not to investigate criminal activity should be investigated. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Dave is in Hollywood listening on KTLK. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Mike. You know, I just want to say, since you uncovered the Lockerbie story for me, I'm going to uncover something for your listeners. It's about five-year-old information for me. But when we landed on the moon in 69, we were already there 7 years with the Russians. We landed in 62 on the moon, and we landed on Mars in 66 with the Russians. I got it from a Persian scientist's sister. So there's Persians up there. We speak English.
Dave?
Yes, Mike.
Now, say that again. We landed on the moon in 62?
With the Russians. They actually landed first and blew up on the way back. I don't know if that was late 61. You know, just thought I'd fill in the blanks for a lot of your intelligent listeners and for you. I know it sounds crazy. I'm not asking you to believe it.
Yeah. And when did we land on Mars?
66.
66? What, and then what?
Well, that's all I know. 5-year-old information was that when we go to Mars, we have to land on the, go back to the moon every 4 months or so. It's all scientists.
Yeah.
And, that's about all I know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, thanks. I appreciate it, Dave. Catherine is in St. Louis listening on Sirius. Hi, Catherine.
How are you?
Well, I'm not sure.
It's relative.
It's all.
Well, I have two things that I'd.
Okay.
The first one, I was wanted to ask if you watched The Daily Show last night. They had a brilliant 8 minutes and 45 seconds of calling Fox News out on their hypocrisies and on air. Talent, quote unquote.
No, I didn't see that, but I'm sure it's YouTube someplace. I'll look at it.
It is, and it's on ComedyCentral.com, but basically he was calling them liberals, because what they're complaining about now, they complained about liberals doing that during the Bush administration. It's quite a brilliant piece, but the bigger picture that I have is that I was wondering if, like me, it's more disconcerting to watch the Democrat just flail.
Yeah.
In the last 4 years, have done absolutely nothing, and I'm almost like don't want to vote if they don't get this health care thing passed. It wasn't like Obama wasn't elected or by the American people or didn't win the House and everything. I just feel like I don't know what to do.
Hey, listen, I'm right there with you, Catherine, and I agree. I've been thinking the same thing pretty much. If healthcare reform fails with all the Democrat control of the House, the Senate, and the executive branch, then that's it. There's no point in you and I and the other 60, 70 million of us continuing this farce. It will mean clearly that corporatism, which is what Mussolini called fascism, has arrived. It's here. And we can get out and knock on doors and do this and do that, and it's all meaningless. So I'm right there with you. I almost called you pal. I'm right there with you, Catherine.
I'm palling around with Mike Malloy. I'm okay with that.
Okay. All right.
So thank you very much.
All right, Catherine. Thanks. Appreciate you checking in. No, I have kind of come to that conclusion. I know it sounds negative and pissy and, oh, well. And I know that's probably what these right-wing thugs have been pushing for ever since they went after Clinton, or before that, to destroy the political system. I think they pretty much have succeeded. It's much easier to blow stuff up than it is to build things. And the morons who are Republicans and these right-wing fake Christers and all this stuff, I'm right there with you, I'll concede. I really will. And I'm getting out of your system completely. If Obama and the Democrats in the House and the Senate don't pull this off, if they don't walk away from these Republican bastards and just say, look, we're going to do this, and if you don't like it, bite me. If they don't do it, if the Democrats don't do it, that's it.
There's not going to be any reason to play pretend anymore. You know it as well as I do. Come on. And I'm not defending Obama or the Democratic Party at all. I'm getting real close to the edge with them too. But I'm just saying, with the kind of majorities that the Democrats have, and the things that Obama said during the campaign, if this doesn't happen, if this doesn't come to fruition, if there's not a public option, he never promised single payer. That's what people like me hoped he was saying, but he wasn't. If there's not a public option, if there is not, action taken by the Democrats in Congress to get this particular piece of legislation through and to do it right, then I'm bound out of the political system completely. I'll continue to do radio and continue to be a living color son of a bitch, but I'm bound out, man. I swear, because what are you going to do? Pick up a gun and start shooting people? You can't do that. So what do? Sit here night after night after night, you and me getting frustrated and digging our nails into the palms of our hands? Or do we just say, hey, life's too short for this madness, and fix another big bowl of popcorn, right? Mike Millar, Radio Gumshoe, when we come back, don't miss it.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Hey, not to worry. Are we going to have Larissa on tomorrow night? Larissa Alexandrovna from rawstory.com. She has a piece out about... Rove reveals that he had inside information about, we'll have her on tomorrow night. Very rare that we do guests. We had Jesse on from TV News Lies a couple weeks ago, and we'll have Larissa on tomorrow night. I just don't like doing guests unless they are, you know, Larissa or Jesse, or who else have we done? Brad Friedman, who substitutes for us. We're going to be gone over Labor Day, aren't we? Is Brad's going to handle? Okay. All right. As promised, round two, a replay of what we did the first hour. This is written and produced by Bob Alexander and performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. This is specifically for the geeks, freaks, and morons who want to have sex. The males who want to have sex with with Glenn Beck. And I don't mean, you know, for all our gay listeners, I'm not insinuating these people are gay. I wouldn't do that to you. People who listen to Glenn Beck would not have the dignity or the presence or the honesty of being gay. I'm talking about pretty much straight ahead heterosexuals who can't understand why they want to have sex with Glenn Beck, but they watch him on television and they notice their mouths are hanging open and spittle is running down their chin, and they feel a warmth down in their nether regions. I don't mean to insinuate that these males are gay. God forbid that they would, you know, have the honesty or the decency just to be gay. These are people who just want to have sex with Glenn Beck. The ones that sent me the emails when I said, if he commits suicide, since it runs in the family, please do it on your television show, Glenn. So to all you people who wrote to me saying, I never heard of you. How many stations are you on? I've been doing radio since before you were born. And here's the proof.
From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Government should be afraid of their people.
Good evening, truth seekers from coast to coast, border to border, and around the globe. Join us tonight as we listen to highlights selected from the voluminous case files of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe. Dateline 1934, Tuesday night, November 20th. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe debuts on the Mutual Broadcasting System. The listening audiences are captivated by the latest exploits of John Dillinger, Ma Barker, and Bonnie and Clyde. The Malloy program exposes a different class of gangsters.
Operator, give me Lakeview 27904. Hello, Kathy? Yeah, I've just left General Butler. He's been asked to lead the fascist coup against President Roosevelt.
Who's behind it?
Wall Street bankers, industrialists, and some of the most famous families in America. Get me everything you can dig up on one Prescott Bush. Yeah, he's in on it, too. We can break the story before the Post gets it. Kathy? Kathy, are you there? The line's dead.
Now, ain't that too bad?
You thugs are never going to get away with this.
Yeah, and you'll set your trap if you know what's good for you.
Boys, take Malloy here for a ride.
The Motion Picture Production Code, the industry censorship guidelines, eventually spread to radio. In an attempt to soften Mike's hard-boiled tough guy reporter image, the writers saddled him with a young sidekick, Skippy McDaniels, and his lovable dog, Puddles.
No, Skippy, I'm afraid we can't go fishing today. I've got a big story to write.
What's the matter, Pop? Don't you love me anymore?
Okay, that's it. I've had it. Get this kid and his dog and cover the news instead of this. As soon as you people get your head out of here, give me a call. Of all the I've had to put up with.
After the attack at Pearl Harbor, America jumped into World War II with both feet. Patriotism was whipped up to a fever pitch as radio programs around the dial urged Americans to buy war bonds to help defeat the Axis menace. Ever alerted to the fascist threat to our freedoms at home, Malloy exposed fifth columnists in this country who were cooperating with the enemy abroad.
Okay, Malloy, now we're breaking and entering. Got any other crimes in mind we can commit tonight?
Relax, Dollface, and shine that flashlight over here.
When will the night watchman be back?
A few minutes after we're out of here. Hey, look at these dates. Now we've got the goods on Prescott Bush. Even after America entered the war, Bush worked for and profited from the German businesses that financed Hitler, in clear violation of the Trading with the Enemy Act.
What'll happen to him?
Well, the government will seize the assets of Bush's bank. And that'll be the end of any aspirations he might have about running for office. Who's going to vote for a Nazi collaborator?
The 50s. Post-war America divides its time between making babies, embracing a culture of consumerism, and looking for commies under every coonskin cap. And then the 60s. The British invaded our airwaves as the United States invaded Vietnam. When Timothy Leary said, "Turn on, tune in, drop out," Mike attempted to do two of those while covering the Democratic convention in Chicago. Here he is in a rare interview with the Democratic nominee.
We're talking tonight with presidential hopeful Hubert Humphrey. As the walls throb and sink with my breathing, and the microphone is melting into a silver pool out of time. Does it concern you at all, Mr. Vice President? You sound almost exactly like Elmer Fudd.
The 70s saw the Watergate scandal unfold along with arguably the most vile form of music devised by modern man.
The story's gone stale.
You tell me what you know and I'll confirm. I'll keep you in the right direction if I can, but that's all.
I've got some sources, but they're drying up.
Forget the myths the media's created about the White House. The truth is, they're not very bright guys, and things got out of hand.
What do you have on Howard Hunt? There was talk his lawyer had $25,000 in cash in a paper bag.
Follow the money. Just follow the money.
Follow the money. Excellent advice for tracking Republican corruption into the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Here's a clip from an episode from the Reagan era.
What do you have lined up for tonight?
Ollie North, smuggling cocaine from Central and South America into this country to get more cash for the Contras. What do you have?
Well, Reagan's Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration have classified pickle relish and ketchup as vegetables so they can cut $1 billion from subsidized meals for low-income students.
Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people?
That's pretty good. Try to work it in the show. Maybe it'll catch on.
And the new century begins with the Supreme Court handing the presidency to failed businessman and Texas Governor George W. Bush. For 8 years, the pundits and talking heads from mainstream media are paid to look the other way, while a select few correspondents continue to search out the real news of the day.
As long as there's a story, I'll follow it. That's my job. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
And as long as right-wing radio dominates our nation's airwaves, as long as the corporate media dictates what we're supposed to see and hear, as long as there are truth seekers listening across the nation, Mike Malloy is on the job.
Makes me want to stand up and salute something. Written and produced by Bob Alexander, performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players, Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Now, I'm going to ask you, what do you think of that segment of the program? Bob really puts a lot of energy into writing and producing these, and we love doing them. But we want some feedback. I want some feedback for Bob. So send me an email. Tell me what you think of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. The entire thing. You know, if you got some comments, if you're an actor, if you're a special effects person, if you have worked in radio, or if you're just someone who likes that kind of radio, let me know. Send me an email. Just send something and, we'll let Bob Alexander know. All right? Oh, my God. Is this Captain Mary in Memphis?
Yeah. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Captain. How you doing?
I'm a happy camper outside of politics.
Yeah? Yeah?
Yeah. I'm sitting here eating watermelon, and I made a successful eggplant casserole today. So life is good.
Well, it couldn't be better. For people who don't know, Captain Mary was a big-time radio personality in Memphis, Tennessee for a number of years. And I don't know why you, decided.
Well, I wouldn't call it big, just infamous.
Well, I thought, look, it was Memphis, Tennessee, honey, where the blues were born, or something was born there. I don't know what was born in Memphis, but, Memphis is a big, important city, and, Captain Mary was, pretty important radio star. So what you got on your mind?
Mostly.
Right.
I was telling Kathy, I guess it was Kathy.
Yes,
I can't comment on any issues tonight. That would just make me angry.
Yeah, that's true.
So I wanted to talk about music.
All right, go ahead.
And you had said that waltzing material.
I'll tell you what. Can you hold that thought?
Oh, sure.
Just hold it, because I have got to take a break right now, and then I'll come back and talk with Cat Mary in Memphis. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Cake tapping, shirt tucking, back slapping, haters of hippies like me. Tree hugging, peace loving, pot smoking, porn watching, lazy ass hippies like me. Tree hugging, love making, pro-choice and gay wedding, widespread digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate.
Boy, you got a prayer in Memphis. The Muriel plays piano every Friday at the Hollywood, and they brought me down to see.
Tell me how you It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew. Technical advisors Ben Burt. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs correspondent. Kay Petrini, education affairs correspondent. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf are this program's ethics advisors, and our engineer and executive producer is Kathy Bay. Good Lord. All right, back to Cap Mary in Memphis. All right, now, Waltzing Matilda.
Right. You said that that song always makes you cry.
I did. It makes me weepy, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of does that to me, too. And I think it was once used as some theme music in one of those apocalyptic disaster movies way back in the 50s or 60s or something. Mm-hmm. But the one that gets me is the "Where Are You Going, My Little One, Pretty One."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know that one?
I do.
Yeah, I just break down every time I hear it.
You know, Waltzing Matilda was played over and over again in On the Beach, which
that's
was
the movie.
Yeah, it was
that's it.
Neville Shute, who was because he's since dead, but he was an author. Aussie author, and he wrote On the Beach. He also wrote, and that was made into the movie with Gregory Peck and Fred Astaire and, Ava Gardner. It was just an amazing film. And that movie was played because the main focus was Australia was the last country on Earth where it was, where human life was sustainable because there had been a nuclear exchange in the Northern Hemisphere.
Right on.
And it would wiped everything out. And I'll tell you something. If you ever pursue it, Neville Shute, he also wrote a book called In the Wet. And I've never met anybody who's read that. Somebody turned me on to it. One night when I was doing radio 20 years ago and I mentioned On the Beach, and they said, well, if you liked On the Beach, if you read the book, which I did, then you will like this other one by Neville Shute called In the Wet. And I've tracked it down and read it, and woo, baby. So there's a couple of books for you, Mary. On the Beach and In the Wet. Weird title, In the Wet, but,
I'll look that up.
Okay.
An excellent bookstore in town that can do ordering, a mom and pop kind of thing.
Well, there you go. In the Wet by Neville Shute, S-H-U-T-E, Neville Shute.
Okay, one more thing about Waltzing Matilda.
Uh-huh.
Tom Waits used the Waltzing Matilda line from the chorus.
Yes.
In his song Tom Traubert's Blues, which is parenthetically Four Sheets to the Wind in Copenhagen. And that will about break your heart, too.
Oh, yeah?
It does mine, anyway. It ends up with the line, "Good night to the street sweepers, night watchmen, flame keepers, and good night, Matilda, too."
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
And it's just excellent. And I've got the YouTube address for that when he did it on piano back in 1977 with a nice backup saxophone. Anyway, I could send that to you.
Yeah, send it to me. I'll send it to me. I'd love to see it, and maybe I'll put a link up at MikeMalloy.com.
Okay, do you have time for one piece of religious madness?
Sure, go ahead.
I was listening to Bob Kincaid some time back,
mm-hmm.
and he mentioned that one of these funny minimalist preachers,
mm-hmm.
I think his name was Boucher, had an old lady in his congregation who was in her 90s, and she died, and so he had one of his followers take her body to their house and prop her up on the toilet and leave her there for a number of months while the good reverend collected her social security check and assured the follower that the lady was going to resurrect any moment now.
Oh, my God.
Mm. And he wound up in jail for a number of years, and this lawyer was saying, well, he ought to get off with just a couple of 3 months of community service.
Yeah, right. I would keep him away from the community if at all possible.
Indeed.
All right. Captain Mary.
That's about it.
Well, I'm glad you called. Don't hear from me that often, but I enjoy your emails. Take care, okay?
All right, you too.
All right, Captain Mary from Memphis, Tennessee. And Bob Kincaid follows this program. If you listen on the web, stick around. A replay of his program from earlier this evening. I think he's on from 7 to 9 or 6 to 8 Eastern Time. And Ben Burch now streams Bob's program immediately after this program. All you have to do is stay where you are if you're listening on WhiteRoseSociety.org. And I think if you're listening, Kathy, if you're listening on MikeMalloy.com, will they hear it too? I'm not sure, but it's available from Ben, WhiteRoseSociety.org, immediately after this show. And if you haven't heard Bob Kincaid's program, you need to do it. I'm serious. You need to do it. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. Always good to talk to you.
My pleasure.
So much to touch on, so little time.
Yeah.
First, great credit to your production staff and contributors.
Yeah, they're a good crew.
Yep. One thing for Bob, be careful. Got four words for you. Nick Danger, Third Eye, from Firesign Theater.
Oh.
anyway, that's the light part. The darker part is, I told Kathy, I think there's been such an effort over the past decades, plural, to totally muddy the waters, totally overload us with disinformation, with all these rabbit trails to conceal what's becoming more and more apparent every day.
Yeah.
It's like, God, I thought I was a cynic, and everything just keeps confirming more and more, primarily CIA stuff.
Yeah, it is. And it's a topic that you know, we have to look at. I don't know why, but Steve, listen, thanks, man. We're out of time. We got a boogie. Thanks, pal. Tomorrow night, we will be giving away more free podcast subscriptions to The Malloy Show. So I'll see you then. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
The best.